Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Lamed Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the Mishnah that you'll find in the upper part of the page, almost in the middle of the narrow lines. We continue with the Kohen Gadol and his Yom Kippur service in the Beis HaMikdash. In our previous Mishnah, we discussed the Kohen Gadol and his vidui on the par that he brings for himself and for his household as atonement. And we continue now with the next stage. Bo loy lemizrach hazorah, litzofoin hamizbeach. He is in the eastern part of the Azorah, to the north of the Mizbeach. Hasgan miyamino v'rosh beis av mismolo. The skan is an appointed individual who, if anything happens to the Kohen Gadol, he would take over. And the rosh beis av, he is the head of the family group of Kohanim that would ordinarily be the service group to serve that day in the Beis HaMikdash, and he is mismolo, to the left of the Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen Gadol is escorted on his right by the Skan, on his left by the Rosh Beis Av. Vishom Shnei Seirim. There were two goats located there. The Kalfi Hoysa Shom. And there was a Kalfi, is a receptacle, an urn that was there. Ubo Shnei Gorolos. There were two, we could sometimes translate it as lots, but there were two pieces of wood, as we'll see very shortly, and they were eventually made into turned into gold. In other words, they remade them in gold. But they had written on them. One had Lashem, and the other had Lazozel. Lashem is an indication that the goat that would be chosen to be Lashem would be slaughtered and offered as a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, and the goat chosen by the lot called Azazel would be sent to a cliff a number of kilometers east of Jerusalem, and it would atone for the sins of Israel. So these lots, these gorolos that were put in this urn, in this kalfi, they were made of shel eshkero ahoyu. Eshkero is a type of wood. The Ason Ben Gamlo Shel Zohov, Vahoyu Mazkirim Oisoi Lishvach. Ben Gamlo, yes, Yehoshua Ben Gamlo, was a Kohen Gadol in the second Beis HaMikdash era. He decided to have them made, instead of wood, made out of gold. And because of that decision, he was remembered in good light, in praise. Over Mazkirim, we make mention of him, Lishvach. In praise. The triangles that you see here are designed to highlight the names of a number of individuals who did things in the Beis HaMikdash, who changed things or added things, and they are remembered for good. They're Maskirnos HaLishvach. We could point out that this is in contrast with the Gemara later on. You'll see in the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Ches, and then in the next Daf, which lists people that are to the contrary, that are mentioned, or whose reference to them is what the Mishnah calls Nai, in a negative sense. So we continue with the list of individuals that did things in the Beis HaMikdash that we recount in a positive light. So continuing in the list, Ben Kotin, he was a Kohen Gadol. Also, Yudbeis Dod Lekior, he made 12. Dod is a spigot or a faucet to the Kior. The Kior was a a tank that held water in the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash that was used by the Kohanim for sanctification of arms and legs, their Yodayim v'Raglayim. The Gemara later on, when it makes reference to this Kior, one gets the impression that it was not just 12 faucets, but possibly 12 sets of faucets. Each pair of two faucets, one was located higher and one was lower on this tank, this round Kior tank. And Mirtz Hashem will have a chance to point out that detail later when we get to it. It's found in a Tanaic source on the lower part, five lines from the bottom of this Omid is the description we're referring to. But the Mishnah on the simple translation level says he added faucets to create a total of 12. Shelo hoyu lo elo shnayim. The original Kior had only two faucets on it. V'afhu asa muchni l'kior. This is numbered 1 and 2, two innovations that he made with regard to the Kior. He made a pulley arrangement. A muchni is literally a wheel. It's a pulley arrangement whereby the Kior, which, as we said, it contained water. And the Kior also was a service vessel so that water contained therein gained sanctity. It becomes sanctified by virtue of the fact that it's put into a kli shoreis, a service vessel. And items that are in a service vessel become ruined upon night if they're left overnight in them. Known as the psulina. So as to prevent this from happening, he made a pulley arrangement whereby it would be lowered into the ground and thereby become attached to water that was in the ground. And that makes it mechuba lekarka, and the psulina does not set in as a result of that. Rashi says here, muchni meforish begemora galgal, a wheel, leshakoi, to submerge it, the bore, in a pit, she yu meimov mechuborim lemeime hakior, so that the pit, the waters in the pit, would be attached to the kior, and that would prevent lina, the elo. If this wouldn't happen, havo mifsili belina, the water would become rendered unfit through lina. Lina is again that phenomenon of items left in a service vessel left overnight. Lefisha kitshu bekli, because the water had been sanctified in the kior vessel. Velo kavod kotshim hu lifsol mayim kadoshim, and it's not in proper honor to that which is sanctified to become, to have sanctified waters rendered unfit. So out of his sensitivity to that element, he set up this muchni arrangement. Continuing in the Mishnah, Munbaz Hamelech hoya oise kol yodois hakelim shel yom hakipurim shel zov. Munbaz fashioned the handles of all the vessels that were used on Yom Kippur, and he fashioned them in gold. Hilni Imo, she's also known as Hilni Hamalka. Hilni or Heleni, some call her, was the mother of Munbaz. There are two things that she did, and we have them as Aleph and Beis. Also Nivreshes Shel Zahav, Al Pesach Shel Hechal. The word Nivreshes is translated based on a posik in Doniel, and the Meforshim there translated as a type of candelabra. It was a gold nivreshes. We'll use the word nivreshes. It was suspended from the entrance of the Heichal, so that it was in the entrance of the Heichal was something was since it was suspended from there, was something that everyone could see, and that will have value for us later on when we explain it in greater depth. And v'afhi, a second thing that she did was also tavlo shel zahav. She fashioned a golden plate. She parshas sota ksuva aleha. Parshas sota is a reference to a section in the Torah in Parshas Noso that deals with a married woman suspect of immorality. And without getting into, of course, all the details, there's a whole masichta called Masecha Sota that deals with that. But there was the need for copying over from the Torah a text that was needed in the Sota ceremony or ritual. So instead of using a Sefer Torah for copying the text, she had the Parsha Sota, the psukim in the Torah that are relevant, had them etched out on this golden plate, golden tablet, from which they would copy over what they needed to do for the Sota ritual. Nikanor, Nasu Nisim Ledal Soysov, Nikanor had a miracle that took place with regard to the doors that he provided for the Beis HaMikdash, Bohu Mazkirin Oison Lishvach. And all of these people were mentioned here in a praiseworthy vein. So when these names are mentioned, we remember them in a praiseworthy fashion. The Gemara. The Gemara opens up with the reference to the tzafon of the they were standing to the north of the Mizbeach. And in our previous shiur, we spoke at great length concerning the word tzafon is not just to be translated as north, but it has a halachic status as well. In this particular Gemara, we're going to be referring to Tzafon more or less in the literal fashion, north versus south. And we have a diagram on the side of the Gemara. You can see an aerial view of the Azora, of the Beis HaMikdash, with the altar. You can see a four-cornered altar and a ramp leading up to it, and the Ulam and Heichal, and a dashed line running down the middle of this diagram. The purpose of the dashed line is to divide north from south. You see on the right-hand side is the north, and the left-hand side is called south. The entrance to the Heichal, you enter it from the east, and as you go westward, so you're closing in on that which is more and more sanctified. But for our purposes, we want to focus on the north-south element and the position of the Mizbeach. So in our diagram, we have to point out that the positioning of the Mizbeach is the subject of a Tanaic controversy. There are different opinions as to where the Mizbeach was located in the Azora. And when we say machlokus, meaning north south, is it how, in a sliding fashion? Where do you position the mizbeach? So our Gemara opens up by saying midekomar litzfon hamizbeach, from the fact that our Mishnah had the two goats with the urn located litzfon hamizbeach, to the north of the mizbeach, michlal de mizbeach lav betzofon koi. This creates the we infer from that that the Mizbeach was not in the north. The Rashi says, at the beginning of the Gemara commentary, just a couple lines down from here, he says, "Mitekomar litzfon ha-mizbeach, shehutzruch lemoshcho mikeneged ha-mizbeach vilatzofon." We have to draw the Koyein Gadol opposite the Mizbeach northwards. So we want to make sure that the Koyein Gadol is in the north and north of the Mizbeach. So it michlal de mizbeach la pitzofon havikoi. It implies that none of the mizbeach was in the northern half of the Azora. Ein klum min hamizbeach pitzofon ho Azora. None of the mizbeach was in the northern half of the Azora. Ve'i havu kaimi kineged mizrocha shel mizbeach purta. And if they would have been standing east of the mizbeach, just a little bit east of the Mizbeach, so lav b'tzofon kaimi, they would no longer be in the tzofon. So if you look at our diagram, and if you would have positioned them in the to the east of the Mizbeach, they would no longer be in the tzofon. Let us now turn back to the Mishnah, or turn back to the Gemara, and after making this assumption that the Mizbeach was not at all in the Tzafon, and that way we could have him, as the Mishnah says, Bolo Lemizrach Azara, he was in the eastern part of the Azara, and also north of the Mizbeach, it must be that the Mizbeach was itself not in the north whatsoever. Now we continue in the Gemara. Money. The Gemara says, well, now that we've established that the Mizbeach is not in the north, northern half of the Azara at all, well, who holds that? Rav Elozer ben Yankiv he. Desanya. We have a Tanaic source pointing this out. Tzfona lifnei Hashem. The word tzfona, the emphasis on the hey, indicates that shehei tzafon kulo ponui, that the northern half of the Azor shall be completely empty, nothing there. Divrei Rav Elozer ben Yankiv. So that shows that our Mishnah would be in accordance with his opinion. The Gemara asks, well, how can you set up this Mishnah according to Rav Elozer ben Yankiv? The whole Reisha, Rav Elozer Rabbi Shimon he. The previous Mishnah was according to Rav Elozer Rabbi Shimon, who has the Mizbeach partially in the Tzafon. And that we saw in our previous Mishnah by virtue of the fact that the Par and its slaughtering was between the Mizbeach and the Ulam. And in order for the slaughtering of the par, the cow offering, which was kotshe kotshim, to take place between the Mizbeach and the Ulam, and the slaughtering of kotshe kotshim has to be in the northern part of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Azora, so if you're between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, that means part of the Mizbeach has to be in the Tzafon. So by setting up the Reisha, like Rav Elozer Rav Shimon, who has the Mizbeach located partially in the Tzafon, that would counter that which our Mishnah is saying, that none of the Mizbeach was in the Tzafon. The Gemara responds, Kula Rav Elozer ben Yankiv hi. Both Mishnayos are in effect in accordance with Rav Elozer ben Yankiv. Utni, and regarding the previous Mishnah, restated Bevein Ha'ulam Vela Mizbeach, that the Kohen Gadol was positioned in an area approximately between where the Mizbeach would be, but not actually located, between that and the Ulam. Now, in order to appreciate this, we have a diagram on the side of on the lower part of the page. You can see in that diagram there's a reference to the Par of the Kohen Gadol, where he's positioned approximately between the Ulam Mizbeach, but the Mizbeach itself remains totally in the south, in accordance with Rav Elozer ben Yankiv. So the previous Mishnah and this Mishnah can be understood using his approach to the respective locations of things. Continuing, Haskan b'imino v'rosh beis av v'smolo. The Gemara opens up with a topic that's has relevance to this idea of one on the right and one on the left. The topic heading that we assign to this section is Gimel Shoy Mahalchim B'Derech, three that were walking along on the road. How is one to conduct themselves in terms of according honor to the one who deserves it? So the Gemara, Omar Rav Yehuda, Hamahalech Limin Rabo, one who was walking to the on the road together with his rabbi, with his teacher, his Torah teacher, Hareze Bur, he is considered boorish. The English word boor would seem to have its roots in the Hebrew word sounding the same way. He's considered an ignoramus. So Rav Yehuda is telling us that if one wants to practice the proper form of honor, he should not walk to the right of his Rav. Tanan, we have our Mishnah. Haskan b'yamino v'rosh beis av v'smolo. Here you have the Kohen Gadol, who is the leading Kohen figure of his time, and the Skan is walking to his right. The Skan is a lesser person. So is this not a proof against Rav Yehuda? So that's one question. The Od, Tanya, we have another source. Shlosha Shoyim Mahalchim Baderech, three that are walking along, Harav Be'emsa, the Rav is to be in the middle, Godol B'yamino, the greater of the other two that are there, if there are two students, so the greater of them is B'yamino, the Koton Mismolo, and the lesser one to his left. So you have the Godol B'yamino, which we dashed underline. So here again you have an example of someone, the Amin Harav, against Rav Yehuda. And likewise we find with regard to the three service angels that came to visit Avram Avinu, Michoel Be'emsa, Gavriel Be'emino, Raphael Be'smolo. Michoel, who was considered the greatest of these three angels, he was in the middle. Gavriel, second in level to Michoel's right, and Raphael, third in his level to Michoel's left. So the question, it remains. Rav Yehuda says not to walk to the right of Rabbo, and here we have our Mishnah and the source with Avraham Avinu countering what he says. The Gemara answers, and we should point out before we go ahead, we're going to see a couple stages in trying to understand exactly the setup. So bearing that in mind, the first stage is Tirguma Rav Shmuel Bar Popa Kameh de Rav Ada. So Rav Shmuel explains in the presence of Rav Ada, Kedei Shiyiskase Boi Raboi. And we look at the Rashi, at the first line under the Gemara text, Kedei Shiyiskase Boi Raboi, Hodikotoni Mimino, that which the source says to his right, Lo Sheyelech Etzlo, Elo Me'achorov. We don't want him walking literally to his directly to his right, but rather in back of him. Umihu godol liyamin v'koton litzat smol eitzel godol ushneim achorei harav mamish. The two of them are the two that are accompanying the rav are literally in back of him. That's at this stage of understanding. We have a little diagram on the side. If you're looking at it like an aerial view of the three walking, that's what it would appear to be as of right now. The Gemara is going to challenge this in a moment. So we didn't translate the expression of Kedei Shiyiskase Bo Rabo, but we read the Rashi in explaining what the intention of the source is. So the source that says to walk to his right would be like we had a diagram walking to behind him, one to the right and one to the left. The Gemara asks, how can you say walking to in other words, behind the Rav is a good thing? For Tanya Hamahalech, one who is walking keneged Rabo Hare Zebur, is opposite to right to directly to his side, so he is ignorant. And Achore Rabo Hare Ze Migasi Ruch, one who walks behind him, who trails directly behind him, is a haughty individual. So how do we resolve? We still don't know exactly how the three should be walking along. Some more answers. The Mitzadeid Atzdudi. And here to appreciate this, we have a diagram which is based on Rashi. So if we look at the Rashi, the Mitzadeid Atzdudi, Lo Eitzel Mamish, not literally next to him, and that we try to illustrate with the double-starred diagram. Velo Achorei Mamish, and not literally in back either, which we already diagrammed. Elo Sheyechase Boi Raboi Miktsas Tzad Rabo. And we try to illustrate this with the diagram where you see the three stars. They are they are to his side, but a little bit in back of him, so that if you were to draw a line across, like we did with our dashed line, they partially cover the Rav's sides. Let's continue now in the Gemara. The Kalfi Hoysa Shom Ubo Shnei Gorolos. We said there was an urn containing these two lots. Tonu Rabbonon, and the title of this section of Gemara, you can see under our Nosei, we simply called Gorolos. The Posuk that you find in Sefer Vayikra, Perek Tezayin Posuk Ches, which is in the section of the Torah that deals with the Yom Kippur service in the Beis HaMikdash. The Posuk says, V'nosan Aaron al Shnei HaSirim Gorolos. Then Aaron, who was the Kohen Gadol, shall place on the two goats these Gorolos. Gorolos, shell, kol davar. As far as the material, the Torah doesn't instruct of what material they are made, so they can be made of any material. We saw in the Mishnah, they started off as wood and then were made into gold. Now, as far as the number of lots placed on these two animals, how are things going to work out? So the source goes through all the different possibilities and then comes to a final one way in which to do things. So we squiggle on the word yochol, which is the raising of a possibility that won't be accepted. Yochol yitain shnayim al ze ushnayim al ze. The pasuk having said, he places on the two goats lots, and the word lots is in the plural. Does that mean two lots on one animal and two lots on the other animal? So, and Rashi, he explains what the Havamina is. Rashi says, Yochol yitain shnayim al ze ushnayim al ze, v'hochi ko'omar kro. And thusly, the Pasuk would read, V'nosan al kol echod mishnehem gorolos demashmashayim. Does that mean that I'm supposed to place two lots on the back of each animal? So the Gemara continues, Talmud lomar gorol lashem v'gorol lazoza. Source is doing is it's breaking down the pasuk that we have recorded on the side of the Gemara. So if you take a look there, you'll notice on the side Vayikra Tezayin Pasuk Ches, it reads V'nosan Aaron al Shnei Hasirim Gorolos Gorol Echod Lashem V'Gorol Echod Lazozel. Now, as we said, we're breaking down the pasuk. So does it mean, therefore, that let's read this line again in the Gemara? Yochol yitein shnayim al ze ushnayim al ze. As we said, does the pasuk want me to put two lots on each one? Talmud lomo gorol lashem v'gorol lazozo. The Gro says not to read echod right now because the Gemara will focus on that word which is in the pasuk, but it will focus on it a bit later. So in the meantime, ein kan lashem elo gorol echod, the ein kan lazozel elo echod. As far as the identity of each lot, there's only one lot that is marked as lashem, which would be the indicator of which one will be the sacrifice, and the other only one for the lazozel, the sent away goat. So we've thereby excluded the possibility of having two lots per animal. Yochol yitain shel shem v'shel azozel al zeh v'shel shem v'shel azozel al zeh. Should we understand that he takes the two lots and places them, both of them, on one animal, and then after that places both of them on the second animal? The Rashi explains three lines from the bottom at the beginning of line V'hochi komakro v'nosan al kol echod mishnehem gorolos demashmashnayim. Should he do that? So the Gemara answers, and we continue in the Tanaic source, Talmud lomar gorol echod lashem. The echod here is being darshened. Ein kan lashem elo echod v'ein kan lazozel Elo Echod. And we look here in the Rashi. Talmud Lomar Echod, Mimashma Shinemar Gorol Lashem. Had the Posuk written just Gorol Lashem Yodea Nishu Echod, I know that it's one. That's in the singular. Grammatically, Gorol is singular, Gorol, one, Lashem. So what does Echod do for me? What does it add? The purpose of the Torah adding the word echod is to tell me this very point, and that is only one lot goes on one animal, and the other singular lot goes on the other singular animal. Continuing in the Gemara, in Cain, ma tamud lomer gorolos. If at the end of the day it's one lot per animal, why does the pasuk use the term gorolos? It says in the beginning of the pasuk said v'nosan aron al shnei hasim gorolos. Gorolos was in the plural. Of what value is that particular word when the rest of the information is spelled out in the pasuk? And I understand that there are two gorolos, but that's accomplished anyway by having written gorol lashem v'gorol lazazel. So what does this word accomplish? Answer, shiu shovin. They should be equal. Shelo yase echot shel zov v'echot shel kesef. You shouldn't make one of them out of gold and one of them out of silver. Echot gadol v'echot koton. One large, one small. But rather, all, both two lots equal. The Gemara continues. Gorolos shel kol davar. The source had mentioned that the gorolos shall be made of any material. And you could see this is a quote from the early part of the beginning of the source. We have a little star to help you find the line where this was found. So, pshita, the Gemara says that's obvious. There's no reason to think otherwise. Lo sricha, l'chidetanya. There is a necessity in it being taught, and it's based on the following. L'fi shemotzinu betzitz, shashem kosuv olav. We find by the tzitz is the head plate that was worn by the Kohen Gadol, and the name of the Almighty was engraved on this tzitz. For who shall zahav, and it was gold. Yochol af zekain, should the gorol that we're using for determining the goats, and one of them had Lashem written on it, so you have this point in common with the tzitz that the name of the Almighty is on it. So is the gorol also to be made of gold, just like the tzitz? Talmud lomar, gorol, gorol, riba. The term gorol appears a couple of times in the pasuk, and that is coming to include additional materials. Riba, it includes shel zayis, shel, if that means olive wood, riba shel egoiz, riba shel eshkura, egos and eshkura, also other kinds of wood, so that we're not limited to gold. Ben kotin, also shneimosor dod lakior. And here the Gemara deals with the water tank, the kior, and the faucets. And on the side, we have this recorded as the under the nosei, brozim, umuchni shel akir, the brozim are the faucets, and the muchni, the water pulley arrangement relating to the kior. Tana, we have a Tanaic source that talks about this. Kedei shiu shnei mosor echov akoyanim huasukin betomid mekachin yidein raglein bevas achas. We learned earlier in the Masichta that there were 12 Kohanim who were chosen to offer the Tomet Shel Shachar and its accompanying elements. These 12 Kohanim had to sanctify their hands and legs before serving in that capacity. Technically speaking, the 12 is a number to the exclusion of the excluding the one who was shochet, who doesn't need to do kiddush yadayim v'raglayim for shechita. But the other 12 from Kabbalah Saddam down and onwards, they needed to do this. And the goal of Ben Kotin was that the 12 that were chosen would be able to sanctify their hands and legs at one time. Now, when we speak about the Tomid Shel Shachar, bear in mind there was also a Tomid Shel Bein Harabayim. That means the Tomid was processed in the afternoon as well. Now, after the first 12 open the faucets and the water pours out, so naturally the water level in the Kior is going to descend, so that if they were to attempt to open the faucets that they used in the morning, so and open them in the afternoon, the water might not be there anymore. So, because of the descending level of the water, so the source continues telling us, Tana, we're taught, shachris b'miluo mekadesh yodav raglov min ha'elyoin. in the morning when the tank was full, so they would sanctify from the Elyon, the upper one. Now, we're making an assumption. If we explain that the 12 faucets were really 12 pairs of faucets, so then this brisa that's contained within this brisa, it's a second source here, is featuring the 12 pairs of faucets. There is a possibility that this section of the brisa is referring to the original kior that had only two faucets on it. And if that be the case, so then we don't have to describe the 12 faucet as being 12 pairs. But whatever the case is, the description is one of faucets at two different levels. And it's saying that the shachris was a kiddush, the pouring, or the sanctification of the hands and legs was from the elyon, from the upper faucet. And arvis biridoso Mekadesh Yodov Veraglov Minatachton, and in the afternoon, with the Yeridoso, we'll assume right now is a reference to the lowering of the water level, so he would sanctify his hands and legs from the lower faucet. And it could be that this is a reference to the Kohen Gadol himself, and he was using the 12 fauceted kior. And that's why it appears here in the singular, he, the Kohen Gadol, was opening the upper level one in the morning and the lower level faucet in the afternoon. V'af hu asa muchni l'kior, again a reference to Ben Kotin, he made this pulley arrangement. My muchni, what is a muchni? Omar Abaye Gilgala tehave Mishako Le. Gilgala is like the word galgal, a wheel or a pulley that enabled the kior of Mishakos to submerge it, lower it into the ground. The word Mishako might remind you of the word Shkia Sachama, the setting of the sun, where the sun dips below the horizon. So here the kior was placed below the ground level. Munbas Hamelech also Kol Yodos HaKelim V'chulei. The Gemara asks, the Mishnah mentions that Munbaz made the handles of the vessels out of gold. Na'avdinu lididhu, dissolve. Why not make the vessels of the vessels themselves gold? Why did he stop just with the handles of the vessels? If anything, you would say the handle is of secondary importance. So if you're interested in elevating the significance of the vessels, so why not convert the vessel itself into gold? The Gemara answers, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Omra Baye Biyodois Sakinin. The Mishnah, which features Munbaz, we're talking about the knives, and the blade of the knife itself could not be made out of gold. Gold was a, relatively speaking, soft material, and it wouldn't lend itself to an effective type of knife, but the handle could be made of gold. The Gemara asks, Meisve, we have a Tanaic source where we see that Munbaz's action wasn't limited to the handles of knives. It says in this source, Afhu also Kane Kalim V'ogne Kalim. Kane is the plural of word kan is, or kane is a is the base of a vessel. So Munbaz made the bases of vessels, and Ogne Kalim. Ogne often is a reference to a rim. The Rashi says base achizosan, it's the part of the vessel that you hold it by. That the ogne kalim and yodos kalim viyodos sakinim shel yom hakipurim shel zav. All of these different aspects of the vessels he made into gold. Now we dashed underlining yodos kalim, and with a dot underline yodos sakinim, so that we see that to explain the Mishnah that used the term Yodos Kalim and say that is a reference to the knives, and leaving you at that alone, it doesn't seem to be the case, because here you see Yodos Sakinim being taught as something distinct from Yodos Kalim. So the question remains that he wasn't limiting himself just to the handles of knives, and with which we explained that the knife itself he couldn't make of of gold when what about all these other things, these other appendages that he was making out of gold? So the Gemara explains, Tirgumo Abayi. Abayi explains this source as dealing with vessels that were bekatzo de nargi v'chatzini. Katzo are the handles of nargi v'chatzini, axes and adzes that were also cutting implements, of vessels, utensils used for chopping and for cutting, where the vessel itself could not have been made of gold. So he sufficed it for him to make just the handles of gold. Hilni imo also nivreshes shel zav v'chule. The Mishnah mentioned that the mother of Munbaz, Hilni, made a nivreshes. We explained based on other translations that's a reference to a type of candelabra, a menorah. In the Meforshim on Sefer Daniel, they talk in terms of a menorah made of gold that was suspended from the entrance of the Heichal. Now, we have a source that deals with that, says Tona, and on the side of our Gemara, by the way, we have a topic heading, Nivreshes Shosta Hilni Uzman Kriyashma. We're going to talk about that menorah that she made, that Nivreshes, and how it ties into the time for reciting Kriyashma. So, the source says, Bishol Shachama Zorachas, when the sun starts shining in the morning, it rises from the east, Nitzotzos Yoitzin Mimeno, the nivreshes sparkles, the glistening of the sunlight radiating from this nivreshes, vakol yoidim shigiyas man kriyashma. This was a sign for everyone to recite the kriyashma. As everyone is probably familiar, the kriyashma is a mitzvah to be done in the morning and at night. So the morning kriyashma, the time for that is when this nivreshes starts to glisten. The Rashi quotes that mitzvosim honetzahama, the time for saying kriyashma is with the rising of the sun. The Gemara asks, is that really accurate? Now here we have this nivreshes, it's located in the Beis HaMikdash, and in the Beis HaMikdash you would associate the Beis HaMikdash with the kohanim that are there. Meisvei, hakore, meisvei, as we raise an objection, hakore eshma shachris im anshe mishmar, the anshe maimod, one who recites the kriya shma together with the anshe mishmar, the kohanim whose turn it is to serve that particular week in the Beis HaMikdash, and the anshe maimod are representatives of the rest of Klal Yisrael that are there to represent the tzibor when public sacrifices are being offered. So you have these groups of people that are in the Beis HaMikdash, and it says if you read Kriyashma along with them, lo yotza, you are not going to fulfill your requirement. Mitnei Anshei Mishmor Mashkimen, the Anshei Mishmor would recite Kriyashma too early. Mashkimens, when they woke up in the morning, and they were waking up very early, way before actual sunrise. And that's too early for Kriya Shema. Ve'anshe Maimod Me'achrim, they would be saying the Kriya Shema after the Avodas HaTomid is completed, and hence it would be too late for fulfilling the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. Now, as far as what about them, that we'll leave out of this discussion, but if you are patterning yourself after those people in the Beis HaMikdash, so you're not going to fulfill your mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So how can you say that her Beis HaMikdash suspended menorah is going to signify the time of Kriyashma? Omar Abaye says both things are true. As far as her menorah is concerned, that's Lishar Amo Dibushalayim. That's a reference to the rest of the population of Jerusalem. Not the Anshei Mishmor, nor the Anshei Maimod, but for other people in Yerushalayim. They, anyone who was entering the Azora and noticed it starting to glisten, they would now. That was their cue for saying the Kriya Shema. And in fact, the Anshei Mishmor and the Anshei Maimon were not saying it at that time. But the Nivreshes that she made was a device for the rest of the population. You'll notice on this page a very long Tosfos, and he raises he introduces other Gemaras, primarily Gemaras found in Maseches Brochas, which deal with the topic of the right time for reciting the Kriya Shema. And for those of you who are familiar with those Gemaras, you'll find this Tosis particularly interesting. But for our purposes, we have explained the Gemara on its, well, so basic pshat level. The Gemara continues, V'af hi osta tavla, she made a plate on which the Parsha of Sota was engraved. And we said it was for the purpose of copying the text needed for the Sota ceremony. So she had this fixed plate for that purpose. On the side of the Gemara we have a nosei, a topic heading, in which we've written the following: Tavla shel hilni avur Sota hech kosuv. The Gemara will deal with what was actually engraved on that plate. HaGemara ma'ale she'ela. The Gemara raises a question. Ay nitan lohochiach ulachria. Can we prove and decide a question that's raised elsewhere in the Shas? The Kaisvin Megillah Latinok l'Islamid. Elsewhere, the Gemara questions, can you write a portion of the Torah? A Megillah is a portion of the Torah, as opposed to writing, let us say, an entire Torah scroll. Are you allowed to write Torah sections in a separate fashion? And the purpose in doing that would be to provide an easier text, physically easier to maneuver a short text for students to learn Torah, learn Chumash. Is that mutter? Is it mutter? Is one allowed to write? Or possibly that when we deal with the laws of writing the Torah, either you write an entire Torah or not, but not a portion. So from this halacha, we see that she was preparing a portion of the Torah in the form of a series of psukim that come from the middle of Sefer Bamidbar, meaning a portion, just a part of one of the books of the Torah, and seems that's okay. So shall we say that this Mishnah proves or settles that question of Kaisvin Megillah Latinuk? Al kach Rabbi Yanai Omer de'ein lochiach mishum de hatavlo kosuv rak b'rosh yitevis. In our Gemara, Rabbi Yanai will say, no, you can't conclude that, because the tavla that she wrote wasn't really a recording of full verses, but rather just abbreviations that reminded one of what the psukim were, but not actual full verses. So Rosh Tevos doesn't even begin to have relevance to the question of Kaisvin Megillah Latinok. In the Gemara, after Rav Yanai makes his case, there are triangles that appear. And on the side, under the Mivne heading, these represent Kushios al Rav Yanai, Domer Da Tavlo, Hoy Sarak Barosh Tevos, would be challenging Rav Yanai's claim that the plate that she made had just letters on it as opposed to full verses. So now we turn to the Gemara. Shamis Mino, this is a question. Should we conclude Kaisvin Megillah Latinok L'Islamibor, that one can write a Megillah as a partial section of the Torah for educational purposes? The Rashi points out that this issue is a machlokas in Maseches Gittin, in the fifth parak of Gittin, and this Mishnah would seem to settle the matter by suggesting one can write a portion of the Torah. Omar Reish Lakish Mishum Rav Yanai. Reish Lakish says, in the name of Rav Yanai, Be'alef Beis. Be'alef Beis, for our purpose, would mean abbreviations. So that you don't have evidence of an entire verse or series of entire verses being written out. Meisvei, we have a Tanaic source, and this is a reference to the Kohen in the case of the Parsha Sota, who prepares the prepares the document, and it says Kishu Kosev, when the Kohen is writing the Parsha Sota, Roe the Kosev Mashik Kosuv Batavla. He copies over word for word, so to speak, Mashik Kosuv, that which is written on the tavla, he transposes onto a piece of parchment that he is writing, that he's copying over. So what is he doing? He's copying over literally that which is written on the plate. Now, it's obvious, or it goes without saying, that the portion written for the sota and the sota ritual has to be the actual psukim, and that's by virtue of the Torah commanding thusly. The issue of what we're writing for doesn't have any connection to the issue of Kaisu Megillah Tinuglas Namid, because this portion that is being written for the woman, for the woman suspect of immorality, that's not Latinok Lislamibo. That's a specific Torah instruction that you have to do this. You have to write out these separate psukim. Just like no one is going to ask about you if you write a mezuzah or you write tefillin where you are writing psukim and not writing an entire sefer Torah. But that has no relevance to the issue of a Megillah Lislamibo. However, the plate that she prepared does have relevance, because it's not the plate that she's providing is not a Torah ordained entity. As far as the Torah is concerned, when a sota comes to the Beis Hamikdash, you would open up a real sefer Torah that's completely written out. So here in this source we see that her plate was used for preparing that document for the sota woman. And it says, Mashik Kosuv, he would transpose that which would copy over that which was written on the plate, indicating that on the plate you had full verses. The Gemara says, Emo, in order to defend Rabbi Yanai's point, say, Roe v'koisev kemo shikosuv batavlo. Kemo means approximately like that which was written in the tavlo. In other words, the tavlo, the plate, were just, let's say, roshe tevos. They were abbreviations, and using that as the basis, remind the coin of what is to be written. But it wasn't as if he was copying over literally that which was on the plate. Meisvei, again, we raise an objection. Kishu Kosev, when the Kohen writes the parsha for the sota, Roya v'Kosev Mashikosev Batavlo, he looks and writes over that which is written on the plate. Ma Kosev Batavlo, so what's written on the plate? Well, here you have a quote from Psukim that are relevant to the sota. It says, Im shochav ish osoch, im lo shochav, im sotis, im lo sotis. If you look in the Torah, Bar Midbar, Perikei, Pasuk Yutes, so you'll see that some of these words are actually words from the Psukim themselves. And you see, these are not Rosh Tevos, these are full Psukim. Tosfos points out that the phrase Im shochav ish osoch is not in the Torah whatsoever. But the idea is being conveyed here that actual words of psukim were on the plate, not just Rosh Tevos. So the Gemara answers, Hosam, we continue at the top of Lamed Ches, Omed Aleph, Besirugin. And here we look at Rashi, who explains Besirugin, Im lo shochav, and that, by the way, is in the Torah. He would write Im lo shochav on the plate. That would be written on the plate, literally. Achrov, but following that, Roshe Tevos ad sof hamikra. Ve'at ki sotis, and likewise, the beginning of that was written out in words. Ve'achrov Roshe Tevos ad sof hamikra. Yitein Hashem osoch, which was words in the Torah. Ve'achrov Roshe Tevos ad sof hamikra. So he would write the first three words of the respective psukim, and the following words of the pasuk were represented by letters alone, Rosh Tevos, abbreviation letters. We continue in the Gemara. Nikanor Nasu Nisim Ledal Sosov. Our Mishnah made reference of a miracle, miracles that happened to the doors. Tanu Rabbanan. And here we have a Tanaic source that relates the story involving Nikanor and his doors that he was providing for the Beis Hamikdash. Ma Nisim Nasu Ledal Sosov. What were the miracles regarding his doors? Omru, so it is told, Kishaholach Nicanor Lohavi Dalsas Mi Alexandria Shel Mitzrayim, when Nicanor traveled to Alexandria of Egypt to provide the doors for the eastern gate of the Azora. We know them as Sha'ar Nicanor. So he was going there, he traveled there to get the doors. On his return from Alexandria, and this was a sea voyage from Israel to Mitzrayim. So on his return, a nachshol is a storm, a sea storm threatened to sink the boat. In order to avoid the danger of being sunk, so the recommended procedure is to reduce the weight of the boat, and that's by throwing some of its cargo overboard. So notlu achas mehen, they took one of the two doors that Nicanor had brought, v'tilua layam, and cast it into the sea to lighten the boat. V'adayin lo nochayam izafo, and still the sea raged on, continuing to threaten them. Bikshu lahatil eschaverta, they intended to throw over the second door. Omad hu v'korcho, he, Nicanor, arose and embraced the door. Omar lahem hatiluni ima, well, throw me over with the door. Miyad no chayam izaf, immediately the sea subsided from its rage. V'hoyo mitzdar al chavreta, and Nicanor was upset regarding the one door that they did throw over. Kevon Shigia Linimolo Shel Akko, when they arrived at the seaport of Akko, Nimolo is a seaport, Hoiso Mifatsvesis Vyodsa Mitachas Dofne Asvino, that one door that they had thrown over floated upwards from under the belly of the ship. In other words, the door that they had thrown over was clinging to the underside of the boat. Vyesh Omrim Bria Shebiyam Bol Osa Viki Osa Liabosha. Another version is that a sea creature had swallowed that door, and now coughed it up, and hiki osu liabosha, and by coughing it up, it was cast onto the shore. V'olel mar Shlomo, and regarding that, Shlomo said, he said prophetically, koros botenu arozim, rohitenu broisim. The word rohitenu is a reference to doors. And he said rohitenu brosim. Now, on a simple translation level, the pasuk, which we're not going to limit ourselves to, but koros botenu arozim, the beams of our houses were made of eras, a type of wood, and our doors were brosim. Brosim is a reference to another kind of wood. However, al tikri brosim, don't read it as brosim, ela brias yam, or there are two versions that Rashi has. Could be bris yam, which mean a covenant with the sea, as if a covenant was struck with the sea in order to preserve the doors, or brias yam would mean a creature of the sea, like we saw in the story. Lefikach kol hashorim shel b'mikdash nishtanu lios shel zov. With this story in mind, we're telling you that in the course of time, when more funds became available, they became richer and richer, the doors were converted into gold. Chutz mishari Nicanor, with the exception of the Nicanor doors, that neshinasu bo nisim, because of the miracles that happened to them. That was the source of such significance that those doors were not made into gold. The Yeshomim, another explanation of why the Nicanor doors were not made into gold, is Midnation Nechushton Mutzeves Hoysa. Because the Nechushton, coming from word Nechoshes, it was probably a type of copper, but it had Mutzeves, is a reference to a color that resembled gold. So there was no need to upgrade them if they already accomplished the gold look. Rebbe Lezer ben Yankiv Omer, Nechoshes Klunisa Hoysa, it was a type of Nechoshes, type of copper. Klunisa, Rashi says, Mizukekes, a pure copper. The Hoysa Me'ira Kishel Zov, and it lit up, or it glistened like gold. So there would be no need to make them into gold if they already looked like gold. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.